us. More evidence that you can't know everything that's happening unless you want to spend every minute watching. I had not seen Howler working on this carpet. With no words exchanged, the three lifted it, walked to the edge of the parapet, lockstepped right off into space. They clambered aboard as they fell. Narayan moaned softly, eyes closed. The Daughter of Night wasn't impressed. Howler took control in time not to smear them all over the rocks and wreckage below. He began sliding gently along just a few feet above the ground, trying to keep solid objects between himself and Overlook. I took a quick look at Long Shadow. The Shadow Master was restless. He'd left his studies to stare vaguely toward Kialune. He sensed that something was happening, but could not determine what. Howler was playing around behind his ally's back. I almost lost the little shit. I had to go back to the moment I left him to pick him up again. Soon afterward, he drifted past a band of Mogaba's guerrillas in the ruins. The guerrillas didn't see him but sensed him and panicked, thinking one of the Shadow Master's pets was on the prowl. The racket they made drew the attention of nearby Taglians. The soldiers saw something shadowy drifting through the darkness. They wasted no time getting off a volley of fireballs. Howler changed tactics. He put on a burst of speed and employed a spell of concealment, neither of which he wanted to do that near Overlook. I would have lost him then, had not chance favored me. A wild fireball clipped the corner of the invisible carpet, which began to smolder. The spell of concealment did not include the glow as long as I stayed close. Howler hauled ass, but he did stay so low that brush scraped the underside of his carpet. At one point, he plowed through some tents and clotheslines in one of the proper Indra Dra's division camps. He was less concerned about being noticed by our side than by his own. The race brought on a mild sense of exhilaration. I didn't notice it immediately. Then it hit me that I was feeling more emotion than usual. Eventually I realized what I was feeling was some feeble spillover from smoke. Sometime during the flight we passed close enough to Uncle Doge and Mother Goda to be noticed, but I saw no sign of them. We also swept over my own headquarters, close enough to startle the sentries and horses. I wasn't entirely surprised when Howler headed for a certain snow-choked canyon. Smoke didn't notice until we were close enough to watch Howler land in front of a waiting soulcatcher amidst an explosion of terrified crows. In my amusement at the birds, I relaxed just a little bit, and Smoke rebelled. She is the darkness. What? That was not me, but it didn't happen again. I backed out and up and away, content to go back to my flesh with the knowledge that Howler and Soulcatcher were up to some treachery that included Narayan Singh and the Daughter of Night. The mood Smoke exuded now, if so feeble a thing could be called a mood, was terror. And terror was out there roving the night, though it wasn't the terror that haunted my spirit steed. I caught a whiff of corruption as I moved toward my flesh. I saw nothing. I stopped, experimented, moved in a direction away from the invisible source. Maybe it caught a whiff of me. The stench grew stronger suddenly. I felt a sensation as of something unrushing. Light flickered in the ghost world. I saw Kina's hideous face for an instant, looking directly toward me, but her eyes were blind. Her nostrils flared as though she was trying to catch my wind. Smoke's terror might have been what she smelled. He fled in total panic. She is the darkness. It was more feeble this time, but it was there. It was not my imagination. Chapter 54. The old man didn't seem surprised to hear that Soulcatcher might be up to something with Howler. I wasn't counting on it, but it seemed like a possibility, he said. They've worked together for ages. We may have Long Shadow by the nuts. Somebody better have him by something if he controls the Shadow Gate. The other thing is, how could I put it? Other thing? Smoke is showing signs of personality, I think. I told him what had happened. Damn, we don't want him waking up now. He thought for a while. I don't see how we can stop it if it's happening. Better see one eye about that. Send him over. Wait! Don't leave. Tell me about the part of the fortress where Singh and the girl hide out. It turned out this was more than a passing interest. He wanted maps. I had that part of the place charted already. All I had to do was get the drawings from One Eye's dugout. I brought the little wizard along. He kept grumbling about being wakened in the middle of the night. Once the old man had what he needed, I shut the curtain to Smoke's alcove and went off to bed, leaving them to their schemes. I didn't escape Kina just by getting back to my flesh. She was waiting in my dreams. No sooner did I lie down than I found myself in the place of bones. Sara was waiting. I had no trouble recalling that she was an illusion. She looked nothing like the Sara who lived so miserably at the Vingao Gong Temple. This one was too young, too unworn, despite her pallor and the neck crook characteristic of a deceiver victim. I'd begun to suspect that Kina was slow and unimaginative, although extremely powerful. How had she gotten the angle on Lady? It was true Lady hadn't known what she was up against, and ignorance is a chink in the armor. A knowledgeable enemy can exploit at will, and of course Kina was queen of the deceivers. It no longer mattered how Kina had fooled Lady. What mattered now was that she didn't fool me. That thought left me unable to pretend that I was being deceived. I wasn't kind to the false Sara. Her flesh corrupted and melted right before me. The perfume of Kina, which was the stink of dead bodies, assailed me. A shadow in the gray distance coagulated into a four-armed black dancer, 100 feet tall, whose pounding feet threw up clouds of bone dust as she stamped and whirled. Her fangs dripped venom. Her eyes burned like dark coals. Her jewelry of bones clattered and rattled. Her breath was the breath of disease. The Daughter of Night rode upon her shoulder like a small second head. She was excited, as a child making her first trip to the county fair. Kina was not pleased with Mergen. Arm bones lifted out of the litter, grasping with fleshless fingers. Sara's skeleton stumbled toward me. I willed myself away, and behold, I drifted up and backward a few feet. I willed myself again and moved again, not far, amazed that I had control and bewildered because I hadn't tried to exercise it before. Kina stopped dancing and stomped toward me. Her fangs grew longer. Her 6 breasts dripped poison. She put on another pair of arms. The Daughter of Night bounced excitedly on her shoulder, immune to the lure of gravity. I willed myself away. I had control, but that was not my world. I could not run away faster than the world's creator. A great, gleaming, taloned black hand swooped down. I dodged. A claw brushed me. I spun ass over appetite into darkness. And I was in the cavern filled with old men caught in spiderwebs of ice. I drifted along past faces I not only knew I knew, I remembered the names that went with them. I felt a panic, like what you would feel if you were closed up in a small place in the dark. A buried alive panic. I did not let it manage me. I tried again to manage myself, and found I could move along the cavern if I willed it, like I did when I was walking with Smoke. I moved a whole lot slower here, though. I tried moving out through the walls. Like the real world, and unlike riding Smoke, I was constrained pretty much by physical rules. My only way out of the cavern would be forward or back, which did not make much sense if I was dreaming and had gotten in there without following any complicated route. Was it possible physical laws operated only when I was in control? Could it be that I was unable to walk through walls because I never learned the knack in daily life? I decided to go forward, up the slope of the cavern floor, because that's what I always did in the fragments of dream I remembered. As I did so, I became aware of an inchoate anger growing behind me, as of something hunting that was frustrated. I did my best to speed up. There was more in those ice caves than old men. There were more old men, none of them known to me. There were treasures. There was junk, like everything that ever fell down a crack ended up there. There were books. Three huge tomes bound in worn, cracked, dark leather rested on a large, long stone lectern, as though waiting for three speakers to step up and read at the same time. The first book was open to a page three-quarters of the way through. I caught only a glimpse of the page before some compelling force pushed me away. It was identical to the page the Daughter of Night had been transcribing when Narayan Singh interrupted her so they could go visit Soulcatcher. The calligraphy was superior, more colorful and ornate, but the child had missed nothing important, I was sure. The anger behind me grew stronger. It seemed to be looking for a focus. I learned early never to volunteer. I moved on as fast as my will would carry me, wondering what sort of nightmare this was. Its most bizarre and fantastic elements were most real. Maybe it was a mirror of the waking world. The anger kept gaining, although I saw nothing when I looked back. It didn't catch me, I don't think. But without actually passing through anything, suddenly I was in another place. There was a full bowl of stars overhead, but not even a sliver of moon. I was high in the air. I could distinguish no features on the ground below. It was like ghost walking without the ghost. Only I couldn't just tell smoke where to go and get there almost instantly. I could move, it seemed, though it was hard to tell. I had to have landmarks, I realized. I pushed back my panic. I thought, I did have information. I knew up and down. I had a full field of stars overhead, so numerous they almost overwhelmed the outstanding constellations normally used for navigation. Trouble was, I hadn't studied the southern skies closely. Any astronomical navigation I did would be only slightly better than a guess. I caught a faint whiff of corrupt flesh. That whipstroke got me moving toward a cluster of stars I vaguely recalled hanging close to the northern horizon during the spring. There were three of them in a flat triangle, all bright. The star at the peak of the triangle waxed and waned. Many legends attended it, most of them unpleasant. I was not intimate with them. From that altitude I could see a fourth star in the constellation, equally bright, below the other three. I recalled seeing that formation when the company was still far north of Taglios. How high was I? Or was I somewhere far north of Kialune? I stopped moving forward and slanted down toward the earth. I found myself over a region where agriculture was extremely orderly, communal, making the most efficient use of man, animal, and equipment, various operations having been laid out in a circle around a central manor with hamlets and single dwellings strung out along the spokes of wheels. Preparations for spring planting had begun, although there were no workers in the fields at night. I passed over circle after circle. The ground between had been left wild. I suppose it supported game and provided timber and charcoal and firewood. I had heard of the region. It was in the Shadowlands west of Kialune. Long Shadow had been experimenting with agricultural efficiencies in an effort to produce more with fewer workers so he could free up manpower to work construction on Overlook and serve in his armies. I was not all that far from my own gang. I worked my way eastward. After what seemed like hours, I spied the glow from fires burning in the ruins of Kialune. I found my own part of our encampment, then my own shelter. I was comfortable enough with my condition to do a little experimenting now. It took only moments to learn that while I couldn't will myself through a wall, or even the blankets, one I had hung for a doorway, or the side of a tent, I could slide my point of view through a crack or hole too small for a mouse or snake. I couldn't go back or forth in time. I was confined to the now of my sleeping flesh. I had control of the dream. It seemed real. What I saw of the camp was exactly what the camp should have been like while I was sleeping. My imagination was not good enough to make up a whole dream world that mimicked the real world exactly. A big question occurred. Would I be able to do this again? Would getting here always be outside my control, the way it had been when I kept tumbling off the wall of today into the horrors of Dejigore? If this was going to be one time, I had better use it for all it was worth. I snaked back out into a cold I didn't feel. For a second I thought about heading for the plane, but just the thought stirred up an instant powerful revulsion. Maybe later. I went toward the mountains instead. Spying on Soulcatcher would do, up close. Without disturbing the crows, I discovered. They remained asleep. So did their mistress. Her company had left. I wasn't going to find out a damned thing. I could go over to Overlook and see what everybody was doing. I saw the faintest hint of light in the east. Dawn was on its way, and I began to feel a compulsion to head for the safety of my flesh. That drive grew stronger as the light did the same. I headed for my body, wondering if I was a dreaming vampire now. Mother Gota was awake already. Though Soulcatcher hadn't been able, Ki Gota seemed to sense me somehow. She turned when I weaseled inside, looked almost directly at me, frowned when she saw nothing, then shuddered, the way you do when a chill runs down your spine. She went back to her cooking. I noted that she was preparing more food than she, Taidei, and I could possibly eat all day. I supposed she planned to take some out to Uncle Doge. Chapter 55. "You look like shit," one I told me over breakfast. "Thanks for the boost." "What's up?" "Bad dreams last night." He didn't know what I'd been going through. I chose not to share everything now, but I did practice my Forsberger long enough to tell him, "It looks like our friend, the crow woman, is up to something with her old pal Howler, our favorite deceiver, and the kid." Both Taidei and Mother Gota glanced at me sharply. I had used the taglian for deceiver, Tuga. It was the same in Yuengbao. "And old Long Shadow thinks he's got nothing to worry about." "Yeah. The old man always says even paranoids sometimes got somebody trying to stab them in the back. Usually when I let him know I thought he was overdoing the paranoia himself. That kind of thing is nice to know, but how can we use it?" "Not my problem. I just work here. The captain gets to make the decisions. That's why he's the captain." Just for the fun of it, I slipped in the taglian for captain, Jamadar. Taidei and Mother Gota looked me over again. In the context of the deceivers, Jamadar means more than just captain. It indicates a leader of a band, which is like a small nation of deceivers. The only deceiver Jamadar, now known to be alive, was Narayan Singh, who'd become Jamadar of Jamadars before the destruction of his cult. They would think we were talking about the living legend, the saint who still walked the earth on his goddess's behalf. I tucked the last of my breakfast away, thanked Mother Gota, got up and left the dugout. Taidei followed me. I told him, "I'm just going to see the captain. If you want to, you can stay and work on the house." We called our hole in the ground the house now. Taidei shook his head. He'd gotten lax about bodyguarding me lately. I didn't feel neglected. Time has a way of blunting the sharpest edge of determination. I waited a moment for One Eye to join us, but he didn't come out. More and more, the little shit seemed perfectly willing to invite himself to my family meals rather than go to any trouble on his own. I should be surprised after all these years. Croker looked about as happy as I felt. His night had been no bed of roses either. He grumbled, "What is it this time?" "Did a little dreaming last night. Went to hell and came back, and then went out roaming without using smoke at all." I gave him the unhappy details. "Could you do that again? I've been falling through rabbit holes in space and cracks in time for over a year. Maybe I'm getting the hang of it." "We wouldn't need smoke." "Especially since he's threatening to wake up." I must have had a nasty look on my face because he raised an eyebrow. I said, "It'd be fun to watch him try to get used to the new world he'd wake up in." Croker smirked. "You'd want to stand upwind. He'd shit his guts out when he saw how far we've come. By the by, as long as you're here, it'd be handy if you'd go see Lady. I sent her your maps. She's going to pick off Narayan and catch the girl. If anybody asks you about the maps, all you know is that we captured a couple of Mugabe's officers who used to belong to Overlook's garrison." I grunted, not entirely thrilled. I wouldn't be able to lie to Lady convincingly. "Experiment with this. I have to know if we can get along without smoke. I already know about one severe handicap." "Huh?" "I can't travel back in time when I'm on my own." He sucked a bunch of air in, blew it out. Wouldn't you know, there had to be a catch. Smoke's got job security. You said you'd talk to One Eye about keeping him from waking up. He wasn't much help. Is he ever? If you see him, send him over. Right. I got out of there, paused outside to stare across at the encampment below Overlook's wall. I said, "The boss wants me to go over there and show Lady how to manage her business." It was a bright, sunshiny day. There was enough breeze to carry the smoke and stench away. Ty Day observed, "Maybe some of the ground will dry up." Most of the snow had melted. It was springtime. Around Kialune, that meant mud season. Mud would mean bugs eventually. I wondered if melting snows would cause floods that would chase Soulcatcher out of her hideout. It was time spring came to Kialune. It had arrived already everywhere else. Chapter 56. "I figured you'd crawl out of the woodwork pretty soon," Willow Swan grumbled when I joined the crowd around Lady. Her staff were munching rolls one-handed while she told them what she wanted done so she could catch Narayan. "You turn up every time things get nasty." Blade showed me a smile.
"The man needs a girlfriend."
"Thought he had one, only she already has a boyfriend."
"That's where she was last night, huh?"
"Maybe." It might explain why Croker was so damned groggy this morning. That man just had one adventure after another. Lady was saying, "There were shadows in there before, but Jawaral says they haven't been a problem lately. These charts supposedly show us where we can find the Shadow Weavers, if we want. I want. We'll take them out before we go after the Deceiver." "Ah, Mergen." She had to spot me, I muttered to Blade. I looked for the inevitable crows. They were notable for their scarcity. The couple I did see acted like they were blind drunk. Lady had employed some spells to diminish the flow of information to her sister. "You stand out in a crowd," Swan told me. "The women always notice you." Lady continued, "Come here. The captain sent these charts. What do you know about them?" "They're supposed to be reliable."
100%, unless there'd been some heavy renovations in the last few hours.
"They aren't very extensive."
Bitch and gripe, bitch and gripe. Nobody is ever satisfied. "One I should go dig the guy up and let you do some kind of necromantic thing on him?"
She gave me such an ugly look that for a moment I was afraid she would call my bluff. But she didn't doubt me. She just wasn't getting the kind of fear and respect she expected. She relaxed, told me, "Except for the locations of the Shadow Weaver hideouts, and where Singh is holing up, there isn't much here we didn't know already."
"Which stuff was what the exercise was all about, woman?"
"There's a little more. Long Shadow is almost always locked up in this tower here, doing whatever he does instead of giving us grief. Howler has an apartment somewhere around here. He keeps two carpets and a flat piece over here, and a little bitty brand new one rolled up right beside his bed." Lady gave me a piercing look. "How could I know that?" I told her, "The day he got here, Howler started covering his ass, in case his partner turned on him someday." "Ah," she grunted. "Howler would. Particularly in view of what Long Shadow tried to do to his previous associates." She turned her attention to the charts, but I knew she wasn't satisfied. She couldn't be satisfied when somebody else knew anything that she didn't. She beckoned Isi, Ochiba, and Sindawe closer. The Nar generals worked well with her. They didn't do so with the old man. Croker couldn't trust them, even though they stuck with the company against Mugaba. "Should we do this in the daytime or at night?" Ochiba, a man I'd heard speak maybe 5 times in that many years, said, "It won't matter in there." "True, but I prefer by daylight, for the impact on morale."
"It's daytime now," Swan observed.
I told Blade, "You can't get anything past this guy." Lady glanced at Willow. "You want to see how well your guards can perform in there?"
"I'd love to, but that isn't their job."
Their job was to look out for the prince and princess, neither of whom he or they had been near in recent times. Everybody there had that thought at the same time I did. Everybody gave Swan a long look. He reddened. Sindawe, you're my second choice. Lady stepped aside so the tall Nar could move closer to the charts. I had kept wriggling forward. Now I could see that there was more than one set. Only one was the one I'd prepared. The other, structured differently, may have been put together by Lady's people based on what her soldiers had found inside Overlook. The Nar officer stared for a while.
We ought to rotate fresh troops in before we do anything else.
Isi agreed.
The men inside have been there a long time, under a lot of pressure.
Lady said,
I'll approve that.
Sindawe said,
We should add numbers for this. Once we start moving, there won't be any point to pretense. Will there?
Probably not. Succeed or fail, going ahead will attract some close scrutiny. And the captain hasn't given us the option of not going ahead. Has he, Mergen? I shrugged.
He'll always defer to the commander on the scene. You know that. As long as you can make a good argument.
We don't have an option then.
We've been stalling in hopes somebody else would come up with a workable solution to the long shadow dilemma.
What's that? I asked.
The fact that we can't kill him.
You know that, don't you? I knew that. What I didn't know was how they planned to send fresh troops into Overlook.
Sindawe said,
We ought to pursue every phase of the effort at once. Here, here, toward these Shadowweaver hideouts. Here, toward the Deceiver's hole-up. And a general raid against the garrison and servant population, too. So they don't interfere in our other efforts.
Go for Long Shadow, too, Lady suggested. You might get lucky.
I was missing something.
There was a 100-foot wall over there, not nearly as shiny as it used to be, and absent some of its pretty towers, but not 1 foot shorter than it ever was. Why were these people not impressed? You all walk through walls or something?
If that's convenient, Lady replied.
We'll crawl, Sindawe told me.
Soon enough, I discovered something else that I'd missed while doing my all-seeing thing in the ghost world. Because I had not been looking.
Chapter 57
They had a tunnel under the wall. Through the foundation, really. But just a wormhole of a thing. A guy my size had to slither on his belly like a snake. I know because I did it. Fool. Why did I have to do it in the flesh? I could have gone back and ridden smoke. I could have seen everything with no claustrophobia, no bruised elbows or knees, no pops in the snot box from the heels of the clown in front of me, no weaseling through the farts and fear smells of the 100 little vegetarians snaking along ahead of me, raising the dead with all the clatter of their weaponry. Where were the Shadow Master's boys? All this racket, they had to be chuckling while they sharpened their swords. They were going to have towels for their afternoon snack. The tunnel had been created in part by a liberal application of Lady's fireball tools. In places its walls were still hot, it was completely new. All I saw when I got to its nether end was a gang of raggedy-ass Taglians who had been on the inside way too long. They looked like they'd had a glimpse of heaven, but a bunch of assholes like me were blocking the way. I was the last guy in my string. Number 101. When I crawled out of his way, number one of the guys being relieved dove into the hole and slithered away. Only 20 got to leave for each 100 who came in. The 20 were very enthusiastic, but nobody heard the clatter upstairs. Uchiba, Isi, and Sindawe began choosing up teams to go thump on Long Shadow's guys. Sindawe always was decent to me, even when he worked for Mugaba. He was willing to change his ways, though.
Would you like to lead an attack group, Standard Bearer?
Obviously, you have me confused with somebody who thinks he's a hero.
You could make big points by catching Narayan Singh.
I don't need big points. Talk to Blade or Swan.
Sindawe chuckled.
You won't see them in here.
Why not?
They aren't company. Lady wouldn't trust them in a tight place.
Interesting. She would trust these Nar. Croker didn't. Not 100%.
Never. Sindawe read me plain. He smiled. This place is tight enough.
Yeah, I still ain't going to be a hero. I'll just come along behind and watch so I can write it down right.
Sin, Issy called. Got to move. The garrison knows something's going on.
The Shadowlanders were slower than I expected. Sindawe and his pals were faster. About as quickly as it took to think it, they led three groups off to the attack, going like they were right at home, although none of them had been inside Overlook before. Overlook inside was no shiny white marvel. Wherever we were, it was way down deep in the ground, where it was dirty and damp, and unpleasant creatures with 2, 4, or 6 more legs than me lurked in every shadow. Tide didn't like it at all. He'd needed several hundred man-shifts just to find nerve enough to come inside.
Move back! I growled at the troops waiting to go out. For now, this tunnel only runs one way.
Tide slapped that moron upside the head, then thumped that fool sitting in the mouth of the tunnel gawking.
Let's go, people! There's a war going on in here! We don't have time for lollygagging!
I was turning into a real top kick. Now, if I could get the vocabulary working. Lollygagging doesn't exist in Taglian. The word got me a lot of dazed looks. The pithier nouns, verbs, and adjectives do exist, mostly, with much of the usual impact. Religious insults work real good, too.
You, I said to a head being birthed by the tunnel, pass the word back that we're engaged. We need people in here as fast as we can get them.
Sindawe reappeared. He was the commanding officer for this death dance. He was amused by my barking, but he was politic. He was a big general, only where the Taglian troops were concerned. The day might come when I was his boss inside the company. He told me,
there's still the attack on Long Shadow to launch. You could spearhead that one.
I recalled the black spear, one I made specially for sticking Shadow Masters. Be a handy tool if I was to do something dumb like go after Long Shadow. I'll let somebody else have that honor. I don't want to hog everything. Tell the truth, the place had me spooked. The smell of damp stone, vermin, and old fear, combined with the cold and bad light, recalled too strongly all my nightmares about old men trapped forever in caverns where never-seen spiders spun webs and cocoons of ice. Coming inside Overlook had been a dumb idea. I suspected that when I made the decision to visit, but I didn't listen to the little voice of fear because all those guys like Blade and Swan were hanging around grumbling about how the boys from headquarters never risk their cute and precious butts when the blood and shit start flying. It was the usual stuff. I started the same sort of crying about an hour after I took the oath. I just didn't want to be the guy the troops thought had spent his last 30 years with his head up his butt. My message reached the other end of the tunnel. People started arriving at double speed. I had no idea if Long Shadow and Howler realized we had a way into Overlook. They didn't act like they were desperate to plug an unexpected breach in the wall. Their response was angry and vigorous, but only with the power you would expect if they thought the bunch already inside were getting frisky. Our people didn't reach Long Shadow, which was no surprise. The surprise of the century would have been if the crazy son of a bitch had come floating belly up. Likewise, Soul Catcher's little screaming buddy the Howler. Except that Issy, who was running that try, was clever enough to know he just might not be 100% successful at squashing the little shit. So while he kept Howler dancing, saving his ass from 50 guys with bamboo poles, 5 other guys burned his flying carpets. All but the little one that he kept right beside him. And Issy would have gotten that one too, if Howler had had the balls to chase Issy's men the way Issy wanted. What Issy failed to appreciate was that very few men were hung as heavy as him. However she managed it, Lady had a good grasp of events inside the fortress. She recognized the failures where Long Shadow and her former employee were concerned. She also knew, somehow, that Narayan Singh and the Daughter of Night, by coincidence or the grace of their deity, happened to be away from their quarters when our gang turned up to collect them. Their servants weren't so lucky. Most of those who'd chosen to come into Overlook
either to serve the Shadow Master, or just to be safe from pestilence, hunger, or other terrors of the world, weren't as lucky as their master. Ochiba took the garrison completely off guard. He and his men must have had trouble hearing their parents when they were growing up. They never got a grasp on the concepts of mercy on non-combatants, which I really didn't get a good look at till much later, after I got out of that slaughterhouse. After the casualties started coming in to the tunnel head for evacuation if the chance came. After Lady stopped sending men in because she thought that would be a waste. After I got me back out of there in one uncarved piece, dragging one end of a wounded Taglian while Tide pushed the other, with the Taglian complaining all the way and the tunnel about a mile longer going out than it had been coming in. After coming up into free air, only to find Willow Swan and Blade there, wondering aloud why I wasn't back inside collecting Long Shadow's ears.
Didn't want to steal your chance to count coup. Sindawe's got you all set up. All you guys gotta do is pick up a couple of sharp knives and slide on in there. You can collect Howler's scalp while you're at it. You'll find them waiting for you together, I think, up by the Shadow Master's tower.
You ready? Blade asked Swan. I got my knife. Blade had a grin on.
He was perfectly willing to give Swan just as much crap as he gave me.
Lady came striding toward us. She was decked out in the complete Lifetaker armor. Threads of red fire slithered over its black, hideous surface faster than the eye could follow. Taglians thought the Lifetaker image matched one of Kina's destroyer avatars. Despite what had been done to her and her daughter, plenty of people still thought she was a creature of the Dark Goddess. Sometimes those people included me. There was a connection for sure. She wouldn't discuss it. But I didn't tell her about me and Smoke, so we were even.
Any success to report?
Her voice was a bass boom rolling down a long, cold tunnel.
Anything at all?
Lots of dead people. Both sides. A lot of them aren't people we especially wanted dead, but I'd say they've only got one way left to hang on to the place. Which is?
Loose the shadows. I sort of croaked it out. I didn't want to be a fortune teller, but that was a future that did not require a lot of divination.
Unless these two get to Long Shadow first.
I indicated Swan and Blade. Lady wasn't in a mood for banter. She never was. The woman had about as much humor in her as my mother-in-law. She did enjoy a good impaling, though.
She did the thing that created the cyclone of light blades and turned it loose among the taller towers. It drifted around on its own, doing plenty of damage and keeping Long Shadow and Howler too busy to finish off her troops.
Chapter 58.
That's the second time, the old man growled. I thought I got through to you after the adventure in Kialune.
He was pissed off because I'd gone inside Overlook.
You take Smoke down there and find out what the Shadow Master and Howler are doing.
When Ty Day and I had gotten back, we'd found Croaker already barking and snarling at a gang of couriers.
Obviously, he thought Lady had started something the rest of us were going to regret. I got the feeling Soulcatcher clued in late and was about as thrilled as the captain. Crows appeared everywhere. They were unpleasant, even for Catcher's agents. They swooped around, shooting crow shit everywhere.
When you're done checking on Long Shadow and Howler, I want you to start identifying the whereabouts of every man of ours.
Ours?
The company.
Old crew.
Gnar.
I want to get everybody together. Real soon now.
You got it.
Of course.
But add in a dab of common sense, Mergen. To get to Kantavar, the company needs a standard bearer. Probably more than it'll ever need a captain or lieutenant. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If anybody had a clue what you were up to, it's just possible they could do the things you want done when you want them done.
I walked away before we squabbled in front of the troops.
Long Shadow was taking it out on Howler, and Howler was getting him even more pissed off by not paying a lot of attention. He was witching up some colorful little construct out of thin air. I had to study it a while before I recognized it as a representation of the areas of Overlook that were in our side's hands.
It was a complicated little cyan and magenta mess, with a tail that dipped through the foundations of the wall to Lady's positions outside. He did nothing to restrain his screams. Several came in quick succession, howls that seemed to have a little extra emotion behind them. The third howl triggered something inside Long Shadow's head. He shut up. He adjusted his mask, leaned forward to stare at Howler's construct. He reached out with fingers as skinny as spider legs, despite being inside a glove, poked at the tail leading to the outside. How did she manage that? That should not have been possible. His lunacy, his rant, vanished like mist in the morning sun. It was almost as if his reason had cleared. The stone cannot be worked.
That's Senchak out there. If you'll recall, she'll work the stone the same way you did.
Long Shadow made a noise like a cat's growl. I thought his moment of lucidity had passed. I thought he was about to have an all-time fit. He fooled me. Find the deceiver and his brat. They need to be here, inside this tower, before midnight, if they want to survive. Howler replied with an interrogative grunt.
I have no use for them anymore. I owe them nothing. They have done nothing for me, but I will give them this opportunity to survive.
I did not wait around to learn what happened next. What are you doing back already? Croker demanded when I sat up. You haven't been out long enough. Excuse me, boss. I've already got a mother-in-law. Yes, I was out there long enough to hear Long Shadow say he's going to turn the shadows loose tonight. Croker shut his mouth. I hurried through the information. He said, you're right. He didn't say shadows in that many words, but it can't be anything else. Get back to it. I'll round up One Eye and get the word out. How long do we have? I don't know. I'm not sure what time it is now. Just get going. I'll need water and food brought in. The water should be sweet. Go. I went. Chapter 59. I came back to flesh every few minutes to report the whereabouts of those company brothers I could locate. The old man sent warnings to those he could, telling them to get over to the division at the Shadow Gate. Wagons were on the move soon, leaving Lady's crude factories with stocks of bamboo her workers had been able to reload. The supply seemed woeful to me. I darted everywhere. When I thought it wouldn't hurt, I fluttered northward. Swarms of crows came and went from the ravine where Soulcatcher holed up. I skipped backward in time, watched the old man, and sure enough, I found a time when he whispered to those two huge crows of his, and they promptly flapped off to gossip with the crazy sister. I couldn't get smoke anywhere near her, of course, and any time I pushed even a little, I got that tickling, she-is-the-darkness sensation. I got a ghost of the same thing when I swarmed off to see what the Daughter of Night was doing, though smoke showed no reluctance to move a little closer. The child was writing furiously, her little face contorted in pain. She was working on a different volume. This one she had only just begun. Oh, shit. She finished the first one already? Croker needed to know that. We might be in deeper shit than I'd thought. Where was the book? I didn't see it anywhere. I'd better find out. I took a dive into the past. I found the Daughter of Night crying. I found Narayan Singh stunned by that. He hadn't seen that before and didn't know how to comfort her, though he'd had children of his own in another time, another world, before the Black Company came to Taglios. I pushed back farther to discover the cause of this bizarre circumstance. I could think of 100 unlikely candidates I expected to see cry before that grim midget broke down. It started when she and Singh returned to their apartment after having escaped it only a step ahead of Lady's raiders. Though forewarned, the child had been too busy riding to pay close attention and had waited almost too long. Their exit had been so hasty, they'd had to leave the book behind. So I thought some lad from Lady's gang realized it was important and decided to take it back to the boss.
I would have suspected Swan or Blade had they been inside Overlook. I was surprised again when I did identify the culprit. Howler. The little snake managed to slither into those quarters while supposedly driving our men back, while Narayan and the girl were suffering the effects of a mild disorientation spell not 50 feet away. He made the book vanish. The screaming wizard must have feared that he could be seen from afar because he pulled a bunch of stunts and used a handful of spells over the next several hours to make sure the book got lost to everybody but himself. He left a blank book behind. It was a twin of the one he took. Curious. How did Howler know about the book? I checked my memories against whatever Smoke could find fast. Yep, neither the kid nor Singh mentioned it to anybody. Long Shadow's people did tell him that they'd asked for writing stuff, but the Shadow Master hadn't passed that on to Howler. I knew about the book. I'd told Croker about it. Howler had visited Soulcatcher. The old man communicated with Catcher. Could it be? If I got a chance to dream my way around there again, I might try to find out. Shit. I could see only what was happening right now. I ripped out of there, went back to my flesh. I was starving and thirsty when I came out.
About time,
One Eye told me. I guzzled water.
Where's Croker?
Out making sure everybody knows they need to keep their shelters buttoned up tight tonight. Trying to get those shadow-repellent candles out where we're thin on bamboo poles.
Oh.
I ate for a few minutes. My manners weren't upper class. Then I asked, you got any idea what's going on between the captain and Soulcatcher?
I didn't know anything was.
I groaned, drank some more water.
You blind?
He shrugged.
What did I miss?
Those two have been swapping information all along. That don't sound that smart to me.
You figure the old man ain't smart enough to deal with her?
That was exactly what I figured. Soulcatcher was a slippery old fish when Croker's grandfather was wetting his diapers. Me? Doubt the captain in any way? How could I do such a thing?
Not you. You're a veritable worshipper of the cow flops he walks on. You got a reason to be in a panic?
Soon as we get straightened out here, I want to get back to my hole. I've got some suckers coming over for a game of tonk. That was One Eye. The world was coming to an end, and his main interest was cheating somebody at cards.
Tell the boss Howler snatched the copy of the book his kid was writing. He left her a blank so she could start over.
I took a deep drink while One Eye stared at me dumbly, waiting for me to explain what I meant. I told him, he'll understand.
Everybody's got to keep secrets from everybody else. So the only people who know what's going on are their enemies.
I grunted as I turned back to Smoke. One Eye had a point. As we neared Lady, I sensed Smoke's She is the Darkness emotion, not very strongly. He must have a thing about females in general, since he seemed to respond the same to all of them. Lady had received word, but she didn't seem troubled. Long Shot of losing his pets had been a concern of hers for years. Her men were trained. What needed preparing was kept at a state of near readiness all the time. Her division might succumb, but not through their own failings. That had been Lady's way from the dawn of time. I yielded to temptation and sped off to the north. I told myself I wanted to see if I could find Goblin and Mogaba. It would be good to know how exposed they might be in the coming mist. But I wanted to go on past there, a long way, all the way to the wellsprings of my heart. I might not get to see her again, ever. This might be the last night of my life. Chapter 60 Goblin was almost impossible to find, despite there being crows wobbling all over above the south face of the Don Depresh. His handiwork was obvious, though. Anywhere that the locals were insane enough to cooperate with Mogaba, Goblin's band had pillaged and burned and made examples. Mogaba's troops had done the same to everyone dim enough to cooperate with Goblin or any of our allies. From a strictly practical, aftermath sort of viewpoint, it was impossible to tell who'd provided which instructional display. The locals did not seem to care who was fighting whom or why.
They knew they did not see any good guys or bad guys anywhere. During the few minutes I took to dip around in time, I saw several villages and manors attacked. The nearer the present the violence occurred, the more likely its victims were to resist, whoever came calling. The four Valaka participated in some of Goblin's night raids. Crows came and went when she did, but a few always did so, even if the big cat was elsewhere. They visited Mogaba too, apparently. Long Shadow had provided Mogaba with an arsenal of mystical objects capable of distracting a seeker like myself, of averting any other watching eye. But this wasn't getting me to what I wanted to see. I did take a moment to check in on Cordy Mather's party. Old Cordwood was on the south side of the Don Depresh now, moving slowly and moving at all only because the mountains remained incredibly inhospitable. Cordy didn't have crow trouble. That I could see. I was startled, though, to discover that a flock of the little monsters had nested amongst the crags and crumbles of the exterior of the palace at Trogotaglios. Though that should not have amazed me so on reflection. Events in the palace would be of particular interest to Soulcatcher, who liked to push her nose deep into everybody's business. I was too eager to visit the swamp, to waste time rooting around in the Radisha secrets.
She is the darkness.
She was still holding a lot of meetings with priests and leading men. Our books remained hidden where we left them. I was surprised that the Radisha was making no great effort to find Smoke anymore. I did not believe that she'd forgotten him. But I wanted to travel on. Bondo Trong should have had time to reach Sara. Oh, he had. He had. For the sheer power of the self-tantalization, I joined him late in his journey and followed him as he approached the Temple of Gangesha. Shortly before he reached the place, he stepped off the trail, which was just a raised path, meandering through swamp, converted to rice paddy, and took time to adopt a disguise using materials he'd brought along. A little more dirt, a change in the hang of his hair, the quick adoption of a raggedy orange robe, and he became a wandering mendicant of one of the Guni cults. Their vows of poverty missionaries went everywhere. Even the Nueng Bao tolerated them. Their holiness was beyond question, however mad they might be as individuals. I've always found the religious tolerance of the Southerners amazing and disconcerting, though it was really only an ancient habit, predicated on the fact that no religious community was strong enough to show the rest the errors in their thinking at sword's point. Trong continued on his way. He did the mendicant part very well. I think he may have played it before, maybe while first visiting Taglios. Yueng Bao weren't welcomed warmly there. They were too arrogant a minority. No matter. Trong was admitted to the temple. The older priests seemed to know the character he pretended to be. Trong did not approach Sara immediately. In fact, he waited till evening before contriving to stumble into her. They had encountered one another several times during the day. Sara hadn't recognized him. He made his apologies in softly whispered Taglian, while Sara was still too rattled by the collision to give herself away by jumping. I didn't hear what Trong said. I did see Sara's eyes focus and fill with surprised life. She accepted his profuse apologies and went her way. That night, she left the door to her cubicle unlatched. She indulged in the extravagance of leaving her candle burning. Trong arrived very late, when the only priests still awake were the three making the regular midnight offering to Gangesha in hopes of inspiring the god to grant the world another complete daily cycle free from calamity and despair. Trong scratched at the door to Sara's cell. It was a crude wicker thing that would not have thwarted a determined woodchuck. More a symbol of the thing than the thing itself, really. A rag curtain hung behind it, containing the light. Sara let Trong inside, gestured him to a seat upon her mat. The old man sat, taking his due. He looked up at Sara with liquid eyes. I knew he understood the substance of the message he carried, even though he was far too honorable a man to have read it. In that instant, I nearly panicked. I had tried some to teach Sara to read, but she had not picked up much. How would she be able to? She would ask Trong, of course. And then I would find out just how good a friend the old man was, if his secret self sided with Uncle Doge. Sara's manners were perfection, which maddened me. Even though she couldn't serve tea or indulge in any of the other ceremonial delays Nuang Bao used to avoid getting to the point, she managed to delay the crisis of the visit for 15 minutes.
"I have a message,"
Trunks said at last, in a whisper that could not have been heard by someone listening outside the door, even had that eavesdropper spoken Taglin.
"It was delivered into my hand by a stone soldier who carried it north all the way from the last stronghold of the Shadow Masters. He insisted that it be delivered to you. Here."
Sara lowered herself to her knees before him. It was difficult for her. She was getting big. She met his eye, frowning slightly. She did not speak. I don't think she trusted herself to open her mouth.
"The Soldier of Darkness knew where you were. He knew what name you were using. This when I myself did not suspect that you had survived the Tuga. Your family are cunning in their cruelty."
Sara nodded. Still, she did not trust herself to speak. God, she was beautiful.
"They knew from half a world away, child. This frightens me. These are terrible times, and terrible people walk among us. Some of them we cannot recognize. The Bone Warriors appear no more frightful than any others. Yet, a message, uncle."
She used that word as an honorific. Trang was not related in any way.
"Yes, I'm sorry. I grow so frightened whenever I spend too much time thinking."
Sara took my letter, stared at it a moment, reluctant to find out what was inside. But she was happy, too, I could see. Her husband's brotherhood knew and cared.
"Who brought this?" "He did not give a name. He is very young. He is Jaikuri. Vedna. Low caste. He has a scar that makes his left eyelid droop, so when you see him from that side, it looks like he's having trouble staying awake." "Indeed. You know him?" "I remember him."
She turned my letter over again.
"Do it, child. I'm scared. Fear is the mind killer."
Damn. All of a sudden he sounded like Uncle Doge, back when he was giving me fencing and fighting lessons. Was old Trung another one of these secret priests? Sara opened the message. She stared down at what I'd written, in big, careful, clear characters. Finally, she said,
"Read it for me, please, Uncle."
Trung stuck a little finger into his left ear and dug around amongst the tufts.
That old man had more hair there than on top of his head. He scanned my message, which he held in his other hand. He took a while to digest and think. Then he looked up at Sara. He opened his mouth to speak, suffered a thought, looked around as though startled. It had occurred to him that it was, apparently, somehow possible for us to see what was happening inside the Temple of Gangesha. It had occurred to him that this was a moment that would interest us very much, particularly a soldier of darkness named of Mergen.
"It purports to be a letter from your husband."
He hesitated just a fraction of a heartbeat as he decided to leave out the adjective foreign.
"It is. I know his hand. What does it say?" "It says he isn't dead. That they told him you were dead. That he knows where you are and what your circumstances are because a great magic has been made available to him. That he will come to you as soon as the Shadow Master is crushed."
That was actually pretty close to what I'd written. Sara started to cry.
Sara.
I wanted to hold her. She was always the strong one. The disasters that overtook her couldn't break her. Always she soldiered on. No tears for Sara, ever. I did not like seeing her emotionally distressed. I drifted near a Trung. He shuddered, looked around.
"That's not all he said. He said, he loves you, and he hopes you'll forgive him for the failure that let this happen."
Sara stifled her tears. She nodded.
"I know he loves me. The question is, why do the gods hate me? I've done nothing to harm them."
"The gods don't think the way we do. They scheme schemes in which a life is only a flicker, just a second in a century. They do not ask us if we want to participate, perhaps as an alternative to happiness. They use us as we use the beasts of forest, swamp, and field. We are the clay they sculpt.
Uncle Trang, I don't need a homily. I need my husband, and I need to be free of the machinations of old men.
Sara started. She gestured, indicating that someone was outside, that Trang should be quiet. I drifted out of Sara's cell. A priest stood a step away from her door, poised in uncertainty. He must have heard something as he was passing. He glanced both ways along the unlighted hall, down at his own small lamp, then moved to Sara's door and cocked an ear. I swooped in close, poured all my anger into my will, and tried to butt heads with him. He spun around. He started to shake. He hurried away. I could scare more than birds if I got mad enough. I went back inside. Sara wanted Trang to send a reply. Her speaking the words were all the reply I needed, although I would look forward to the note as a physical confirmation of our eternal connection, an icon to carry with me till we saw one another again. Trang agreed, but he chose his words carefully. He kept looking around like he thought the place was haunted. He asked, "How is your pregnancy going?" "That is one thing I do very well, without great effort or trouble, uncle. I have babies."
"This one will be bigger than your first two. Your husband is a big man."
"Do you expect the child to be a devil too?"
Trang smiled thinly.
"Not in the sense others might mean, but in the sense of Hong Tre's prophecy, probably. Your grandmother was a wise woman. Her prophecies all come to pass, though not always in the manner we imagined when she offered them."
"She said nothing about any monster."
"What she said and what your mother and Doge heard were not necessarily the same. There are things people just don't want to hear."
He had my interest on several fronts. I might learn something more about Uncle Doge. I might learn something about this prophecy of Hong Tre's, which, so far, was almost as mysterious as the concerted determination of all Taglians that the Black Company had to be some sort of catastrophe in the making, worse than any flood or earthquake. Trang disappointed me. He said nothing more. In fact, he struck a listening attitude. I popped into the hallway. The man I'd frightened before was returning, and he was bringing friends. I swooped at him again, angrier than before. He was no hero. He squealed and took off. His companions yammered among themselves. They decided their friend must have mental problems. They went after him instead of going on to Sara's cell. I followed to make sure. Trang was gone when I got back. A flick through time provided me no useful information. Chapter 61. Sara had moved to her pallet. She was on her knees there, palms atop her thighs, staring straight forward, waiting. I drifted into position in front of her.
"You're here, aren't you, Mer? I can feel it. You're what I felt before, aren't you?"
I tried to answer her. I got, "She is the darkness from smoke," and a reeling back. Why now? Sara had not bothered him before. Had she? He didn't like any female these days. He even tensed up around the Radisha when we were there. I pushed inward. Smoke pushed back. Sara sensed something. She said,
"I'm too heavy to travel now. I'll come as soon as our son can travel."
A son? Me? I became a different man in that moment. But it lasted only a few seconds. Only until I wondered, how could she know that? Some people called her a witch. Well, spooky. I never saw it myself. But maybe she could know. My world began to shudder and shake. I had enough experience ghost-walking to know that meant somebody back at the shop wanted me to wake up. Reluctantly, I responded. I wished there was some way, any way, to let Sara know I'd gotten her message. "I love you, Sari," I thought.
"I love you, Morgan," Sara said, as though she'd heard me.
The shaking grew more insistent. I turned loose of the Temple of Gangesha, but refused to be managed completely. I tried to drop in on the Radisha for a closer look at her scheming, but smoke shied away with an aversion almost as strong as that he showed for Soulcatcher.
"She is the darkness."
The earth blurred beneath my point of view. I was low and moving fast.
Maybe that helped defeat some of the spells making Goblin and Mogaba so hard to find. I got a clear, if brief, look at both as I whipped past. They were on the move. Mogaba seemed to be gathering strength. The Forvalaka was with Goblin. Both groups moved inside an envelope of crows. Soulcatcher probably had a better idea of the big picture than I did.
"Don't you ever learn!"
Croaker snarled. I barely had strength enough to sit up and reach for something to drink. I'd spent a lot more time out than I realized while it was happening. Sorry always did make me lose track of time. "Shit," I murmured. That took it out of me. I could eat a cow.
"You weren't supposed to be dealing with family things. You keep it up, it's going to be crow, not cow."
You couldn't find an edible cow in this end of the world anyway. I grunted. I had a pitcher of something sweet in one hand and a warm loaf of bread in the other. At that moment, it didn't occur to me to ask why he would accuse me of getting involved in family things.
"It's dark already. Our people are all climbing into their holes and pulling them in after them.
I need you rested and ready because I want you over there watching the Shadow Gate,
and not sightseeing either.
We need to get a signal up the instant Long Shadow cracks the gate." I lifted a hand. As soon as I cleared my mouth, I asked, "Why don't I watch Long Shadow? Smoke don't want to get close out there. I might not see the shadows moving till it's too late. Long Shadow I can see while he's making his summons." I dumped some sugar water in behind the last bite of bread. Smoke groaned.
"Shit!"
Suddenly, the old man looked like he wanted to cry. "Where's One Eye?" I asked. "Better get him in here." Smoke hadn't made a sound in years.
"You find him. I'm the physician here."
He headed for Smoke's cot.
"Good idea."
I got myself up and stumbled toward the doorway on still feeble legs. Chapter 62. It was a great night for all hell to break loose. I hadn't really noticed the gathering darkness while walking the ghost, so lost in thought had I been. But clouds were moving in to deepen the darkness.
"One Eye!"
I bellowed.
"Get your dead ass over here now!"
I considered the clouds. My suggestion looked real good now. Where the hell was that little shit? I climbed on up out of Croaker's dugout.
"One Eye!"
I headed for his hole. Surely he didn't intend to spend the night there. He hadn't done nearly enough work on it to make it a good place to wait out a night when shadows were slithering about, wizard or not. I was almost there when the little wizard came scuttling from the direction of my shelter.
"What do you want, kid?" "Where the hell you been? Never mind. We got trouble with the ghost." "Huh?"
"He's making noise," I whispered. Then I glanced around. I'd forgotten to guard my tongue. It was my lucky night. There were no crows anywhere around. One Eye glanced over his shoulder.
"Making noise?"
He didn't believe me. Did I stutter?
"Get your ass in there. Croaker's already checking him for physical problems."
I continued to look for listeners. Mice and bats and shadows have little ears too. A boreal light rippled between Overlook and the jagged ruins of Hialune, reflecting brilliantly off the metal in the fortress wall. It was just a sputter, though, as Lady got tuned up. A moment later, the only light visible anywhere came from the surviving chambers of crystal atop